This is American Fashion Podcast. I'm Charles Beckwith, here with Kathy Sheppes.
Good day.
And we're joined in the studio by Catherine Hildebrand from Good Clothing Company up in Massachusetts. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, thanks for having me, Charles.
And we also have here Mark Linton, who was at the White House and created a lot of initiatives around makers and communities and building communities and kind of rebuilding Detroit and that sort of thing. And he's involved with Good Clothing Company, which we'll hear about in a moment. And one of my favorite fashion media icons is here, Mr. Tim Gunn. Hi, Tim.
Thank you, Charles. And I'm a fan of yours.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Have you been listening to the show much?
I have been.
Wow. I Keenly. Feel so nervous now.
No, I'm already on board. I'm already a fan.
Great, great.
No, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Catherine, why don't you give us a picture of Good Clothing Company. What is it and where is it going?
A Good Clothing Company is a manufacturing facility on the Cape and in Fall River, Massachusetts. We started out about 2 years ago with a focus on small batch manufacturing. Reshoring manufacturing was certainly it was on the page, but it wasn't the focus at the time. We were really focused on small batch manufacturing and giving tools to emerging designers to enable them to launch and thrive and to challenge really the traditional manufacturing model in a way that was more congruent with what we're dealing with in these days and times. We started out with a very, very small staff of about 5 or 6 women. We've grown quite extensively. We now occupy a very, very large mill in Fall River. Our Cape facility has expanded 5 times, and we're now a soup-to-nuts facility doing everything from small batch manufacturing, pattern grading and development, design, all the way to large-scale manufacturing.
Something else that it looks like you're also offering is help with marketing and customer acquisition. I think that's
On some level, yes. We're offering consultations and we're aiding our clients in achieving those things. It's not a focus of ours, but we're certainly there as an advocate for that, absolutely.
As a service.
Yes, absolutely.
And some of what I read was that your key motivation was to bring an awareness to the industry. So can you talk about that awareness?
So, the desire for us to have that awareness actually came from my own very personal story. I've been in this industry for 31 years. I am a master tailor, also happened at the time to be a single mother of 2 wonderful children, and was facing the same challenges that all of my peers in the industry were facing. Not only were designers facing that, but everyone whose hands touched garments here on U.S. soil were facing those challenges. And so for me, this became an opportunity to do my part to change what I felt really was not working.
Very important.
So, do you think most emerging designers are aware that your services exist, that Good Clothing Company is out there and can do short runs?
I don't think that most are. I think a lot more are today than were a year ago. But we definitely have a significant number of designers who are aware that we exist. We turn away 4 times the amount of work that we can actually take on currently. There are a lot of people who know about us. Definitely not enough, and we certainly don't aim to be the only small batch manufacturer out there who's aiding emerging designers, but we're hoping that we inspire others to follow suit and do the same.
Now, what makes it, what happens that someone would be turned away? Is it just your capacity, or are there certain things you can't do yet?
We're running at capacity, and we're booked out for months now. Both in development and in manufacturing. Our sample making department is completely swamped. Our manufacturing right now on the floor is completely swamped. We're working, I say that I don't want to discourage everyone because we're working actually very hard right now to change that dynamic. We're working with the state of Massachusetts to develop some training programs so that we can expand our floor and offer more of those services. It's really important to us, but right now that is what we are faced with, yes.
So, Mark.
Yes.
You served as deputy director with on Obama's team. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but really concentrating on economic turnarounds in certain states. So how are you supporting Catherine, and how do you see that initiative rolling out?
Well, thank you all for having me. So I, as you were indicating, I worked in the Obama administration for years, and I ran a White House initiative on cities. And we were focused at a very granular level going out to places that were trying to come back after the recession and looking at how we could help them put their economies back together and create new employment opportunities and rebuild the infrastructure of their cities in many cases, both the economic infrastructure and the actual physical infrastructure. And I was lucky enough to be introduced to Catherine, a good clothing company, recently, and fell in love with her mission, her business model, what they're all about, because when I was in the administration and I left last year, you know, the places that were successful were the places, places like Detroit, places like New Orleans, places like Memphis, that were not only investing in the next generation of job opportunities, new tech and green energy jobs and things like that, but also looking to fundamentals and things that we've lost as a nation. And so a lot of cities are really interested in the reshoring movement, and particularly in apparel manufacturing, because there's such huge untapped potential. So if you look at the impact that a company like Catherine's is having in a place like Fall River, which was just clobbered even before the recession, is now making a comeback. And Good Clothing Company's plan sits right along the river, along a backbone where they've actually revitalized part of the waterfront. And Catherine is not only creating wonderful fashion and helping labels and accounts that are thrilled with the product they're getting, but the economic opportunity that's being created for people who are looking for good quality jobs is a real inspiration. And so in my experience, mayors around the country, as well as people who work in the White House and at the federal level, are very interested in trying to figure out how to be supportive of companies like Good Clothing Company. And I would also say, and we talked about this with Tim earlier, what we can do as a country to try to encourage and nurture this shift of reshoring a chunk of our apparel manufacturing, because we're at 90% being produced overseas right now. And I think the pendulum has swung too far in that direction. And I think there's a lot of room for us to correct that. I don't think it's all coming back here, but I think that we're going to see hundreds of billions of dollars in sales over the next 10 years or so from apparel that is made here. And so it's an exciting time to be a part of it.
I know a lot of designers have been talking about creating their own collaborative factories where there's three or four designers that do a particular type of product and they want to set up their own shop that makes their clothing. Are there government funds available to help jumpstart that sort of thing?
Well, I think Catherine's been right to focus in on one of the most important areas, which is if we can get some additional support from the state and the federal level to look at workforce and training opportunities. You know, people who sew can be trained in as little as 10 weeks to do some of the kinds of work that Catherine needs, a good clothing company. And when you look at that compared to much more capital-intensive startup efforts or areas where you have to put even more significant resources, and this is really low-hanging fruit for policymakers at any level of government, mayors, state legislators, or federal policymakers who are looking to jumpstart our economies, not just in places like the Fashion District, which lost a bunch of sewing capacity, right? But in places like Macon, Georgia, or Fall River, or Detroit. We should be jumping on this because there's nothing but a matter of a little bit of political will and some flexibility in how we apply some of these training programs.
What happens in that 10 weeks that someone who already knows how to sew gets trained to be a manufacturing sewer and manufacturing production worker? What do they learn in that 10 weeks?
So I'll go into what they learn in the 10 weeks in just a moment, but what I'll tell you is that one of the things that we're discovering in manufacturing is that the manufacturing of old is sort of obsolete. It doesn't really apply to today's mindset. We're all concerned with sustainability. We're concerned with overproduction. We're concerned with environmental issues. So what we're focusing on at Good Clothing Company is producing as little as possible, right? So if you really only need 200, I don't want to push you to sew 2,000. And so what that means is a change in dynamic on the sewing floor. And what stitchers were typically trained to do was to be very repetitive in their one skill set or their task. And what we are now needing to train them to do is to be agile, or to be have the ability to move from a certain construction, maybe from one task to a different task, but we want them to be more comprehensive in knowledge. And so in 10 weeks, not 10 actually, it's actually 12, but in 12, sorry, that's okay. But in 12 weeks, with what amounts to about a 90-day intensive training program, we can go with everything from basic sewing all the way through the 5 to 7 basic machines that you would use for manufacturing. Things like ease, garment construction, the importance of pressing, relaxation of fabrics, and all the things that you need to understand when you're moving from textile to textile, when you're moving from pattern to pattern. Sewing is less about being robotic with your functions and more about being mindful and being an artist.
Now, I don't know if this is a real thing that happened, but I was told at one point that someone did a test with a group of Chinese garment workers in a factory and a group of American garment workers in a different factory, and they gave them a task to produce a set amount of clothing, and the Americans finished in half the time because the Chinese had a manager who was telling each person to do a certain task, and the Americans talked to each other and figured out more efficient ways of producing it. And that's what you're talking about, right?
I didn't know about the study, and I think that's incredibly interesting. But yes, that's exactly what we're talking about. Exactly what we're talking about.
So, Tim, and there are so many questions that I want to ask. But first, just from your perspective, and part of what I just said to Charles before you all came here is, you know, there's so much here that is starting to happen in terms of reshoring. Maybe we should have a reality show about it. But as you're sitting here and you're obviously very entrenched in the fashion industry, what's your thinking, and what are you thinking are our biggest challenges?
Well, I think Catherine is beautifully addressing what our biggest challenge is, which is to reshore so much of this manufacturing. And Mark has incredible experience and knowledge and foresight into this. And we all think that this is a very, it's a very robust opportunity. And as Catherine has said ever so potently, it's not theory-based. I mean, it's now a reality, it's happening. So we have a wonderful model for how we can repurpose warehouses that are standing empty in so many cities that would benefit tremendously from help. This is only good for the economy and for employment. And as an advocate for young designers or designers of any kind and any age, this is a game changer for them. Because without the work of Catherine, for instance, these young designers with very limited production have no hope other than sewing things on their own or developing a collaborative, as you were mentioning earlier, Charles, which is, I have to say, for the inexperienced, rather daunting. So as an advocate for young designers and for bringing more manufacturing back to this nation and for a healthy economy that addresses many, many issues having to do with our society and culture, I am a huge advocate for this movement, and I stand profoundly behind it.
Now, you were in charge of the fashion department at one of the major schools.
Yes.
What kind of shift in education did you have to oversee during your time there?
I'm trying to think of the adequate words to describe it, Charles. I stepped into a curriculum. Would you prefer I not mention the school?
No.
Oh, I was at Parsons School of Design. I was there for 24 years, the last 7.5 of which I was the chair of the fashion design department. I stepped into a curriculum that had been established in 1952, so it had remained unchanged for 48 years. And we all know how much this industry has changed, and Parsons had not budged. The theory being that there are so many successful alums that this thing isn't broken. Well, it was badly broken. So I brought, by mandate of the dean, I brought a 21st century lens to how this entire industry has changed, morphed, evolved, and for speaking for my own leadership, I was intent upon creating a program that would help our graduates lead and not just get jobs. And it was much more than curricular content. It was also pedagogy. How do you deliver this information? How do you deliver it and have students excel and attain levels of achievement that even they would have thought that they couldn't achieve? And of all the things that I've done professionally, it's what I'm proudest of.
The dean at that time, that was Simon Collins, right?
No, Simon followed me.
Okay. Simon replaced you as
yes.
the chairperson.
Yes. Okay.
So who was that you were working with as the dean at that time?
I was working with Randall Swearer. He was the dean at that time. He was the dean of the school. The dean of fashion was a position created for Simon Collins.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. That
yeah.
that kind of spins it in that fixes the thoughts I had about it.
We had a podcast about a week ago, and we had individuals here from Save the Garment Center, and we had a marking and grading company here, and a small manufacturer. And the more that I'm part of this show, I also see how many small designers there are that are choosing to go more direct, which also then demands, faster turns, smaller lots, and so on. So I feel like how... there seem to be all of these little one-offs, so to speak. So, and there's power in collaboration. So, how will we get this word out there more? How do we get more support from the government if that's what's necessary?
Well, we were just talking about that too. I think there's a few things. First of all, and Catherine and Tim should jump in, but I think it's not just the smallest of the small designers. I think there are larger labels that really are really beginning to recognize the importance and frankly the mandate to bring some apparel manufacturing back. So Good Clothing Company is positioned to be working with a variety of clients to do this kind of thing. I think in terms of raising awareness, frankly, it is about trying to educate policymakers at every level that right now we spend about $1.3 trillion a year on apparel in the U.S. And again, most of that is made overseas. And when you look at the quality issues around sourcing, supply chain, what that means for the longevity of the garment, and you compare that to what happens when it's made here or made at a company like Good Clothing Company, this is about risk management for larger companies, as a side note. But also, from a policymaker's perspective, these are jobs that are, in infrastructure, we talk about shovel-ready jobs, right, when you're building roads. These are sewing-ready jobs. I mean, there is demand for apparel and for garments that we could start tomorrow. So, and the startup costs are very low here, right? So I think it's really about educating policymakers and, to your point, helping to kind of build a coalition of smaller and up-and-coming designers. I think we do that by having these kinds of conversations and having leaders like Catherine and Tim and others who are willing to continue to educate and evangelize. And I would love your all's thoughts on that, too.
Well said. That I think accompanied with just this type of discussion, this type of discussion that we're having today, and really validating that these are the issues that people are facing. These are the struggles that I think designers are facing, and how do we address those, and how do we collaborate as community to meet those needs, and then further that conversation on a larger level. I think what we're doing right now. Is exactly what we need to be doing.
And of course, you're right, younger designers won't help to make the turnaround. It's how do you start to get some of the larger apparel manufacturers to make that move, and then others will follow. And I know that Nike's talking about starting to produce here. I don't know if that's clothing or that's shoes or starting to bring some back. And the truth is that, everyone's operating on these really high margins, and now we've got increases in hourly wages happening. And even though we're not selling goods through at a higher price, no one's lowering their margins. And the difference in maybe what you save in duty and transportation probably really won't be enough to help them kind of recover in the first few years of them bringing some back, because you have this lopsided balance within your pricing structure.
Right.
So how do we...
Well, we have a lopsided global economy. So, in my opinion, taking that hit initially to reshore and change things long term seems to be a prudent choice. We also look at the consumer habits and you know, the way people are buying and what people who, the millennials in particular, or people who are mindful about our environment or mindful about ethics or mindful about, you know, workers' rights, or who just flat out give a damn, they're purchasing things that are made with a really solid story behind that. And so what we're encouraging companies to do is to change the practice that you've been involved with, and I say that without finger pointing. We as a nation made decisions, we as a nation followed suit, and we're all learning a lesson, myself included. Let's all come together and make some decisions that we know are right. Going vertical, obviously, is one of the ways to solve some of those issues. But I think collaboratively, as we work together and we look at you know, the consequence of some of the choices that we've made, and we address those head on with a grin on our face and some determination, I think we turn some things around.
Mark, I know you worked mostly on domestic policy, but on this show, we've been very critical of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the trade treaty that kind of links a lot of the Asian countries, excluding China, even though China can sell things to the United States by shipping it to Vietnam and getting made in Vietnam label and it gets shipped here. From your perspective, is our trade policy leaning towards Americans having more jobs, or is it leaning away from it?
Well, I don't want to get too far in the weeds and speak out of school about the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yes.
Because that is not my wheelhouse. But let me come at that a different way, which is that, and Tim was just reminding us some of the work he had done, and he might have an important perspective on the international angle. But I guess I feel like the question really is, we're going to have a manufacturing agenda, a robust manufacturing agenda for the foreseeable future. So I would almost set the trade question aside and say, you know, and I think you're right to talk about margins, but I think that just from a business perspective, it's going to start to make much more business sense to be producing here. But I also think from the framework and the sets of policies we can put in place that are not going to be wildly expensive in order to sort of give this a little nudge and support it, this is low-hanging fruit. We should be, you know, a month from now, we should have hundreds of people on the floor, you know, in places like a clothing company and others, and then thousands and then tens of thousands. And I think that is actually what's going to happen. So we're basically talking here about a trend that we're all spotting, I think, before it is more widely known among a broader audience.
Is there anything that could immediately derail that we should be watching out for?
Well, I mean, I think assuming the right people are elected in the national election tomorrow, I think the things that could derail it, I would defer to Tim and Catherine, who've seen labels come and go, who've seen production practices come and go. But I think that from a policy perspective, if people chase only the new thing, only the sexy thing. So, for instance, if every city is saying we're going to be biotech and green jobs only, and that's all we're going to do, then I think that's missing an opportunity to not only focus on innovation, but frankly, denovation, which is to say, let's go back to basics and focus on some things that we know we do really well historically as a country. And a lot of the progressive and forward-leaning leaders, even at the local level, I think recognize this and say, you know what, we're always going to have an economy that should be comprised of a variety of manufacturing along with all the other sectors we have. And I think as long as we have that, instead of either kind of getting distracted by the new flavor, I don't think there's a lot that's going to derail this, but I would defer to you all.
Well, and I will just add that Catherine and Mark and I agree that what's so critical is to get the word out. We need to educate people about what this is and about how incredibly enormous the opportunities are, and they're so achievable. I mean, when you think about a 12-week training session versus I don't know how many years of education, if you're going into biotech or anything having to do with technology, and this is so grassroots, it's just so ripe for the picking. Going back to your low-hanging fruit,
right? And we should be mindful of our society as a whole. I think when we're talking about you know, innovation has its place. Definitely, it's exciting. It's we're forward thinking and forward moving, and in many cases, it's you know, creating a much leaner form of manufacturing. But it's also very, it's not inclusive of all of the faces of people in society, right? Not everyone is either going to have the desire to work in that, nor are they going to necessarily have the ability. And so we need to be inclusive, and we need to be thinking on a broader spectrum. And I like what you said, you know, sort of going back to basics, but going back to basics in a way that's forward thinking.
And Catherine, I'll add, it's so important for everyone to know that you've established a new paradigm in how your own company operates. It's not a matter of looking to the past and saying, oh, let's replicate those methods. It's an entirely new conceptual process and execution.
Absolutely. So, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, it's absolutely. We are utilizing the skills that we've had for a number of years, but we're doing it in an entirely different way. We are looking at not only changing the numbers that we're doing in manufacturing, but we're changing opportunities for, I say this without sexism in my, you know, in my delivery, but we are creating opportunities for our staff, which is primarily women, at a higher salary or a higher hourly rate than our competitors in our area. We're creating opportunities for advancement. We're creating opportunities for them to learn and grow within our field and then into the training capacity. So for us, it becomes an opportunity for them to become empowered and for myself even to become empowered, and for us to exact some change in that arena.
So I don't remember what year your business opened, but obviously the more business you have, the more people you have to hire.
Sure.
What is your growth like at the moment?
So right now we're at just under 2,000% growth in the last 2 years. That dynamic is getting ready to change significantly. We are looking at reshoring a couple of very large accounts. I normally will speak of the name, I think, right now, because we have not fully closed those. I'm going to decline to do that here, but I will assure you that they're fairly solid. And so what that means for us, and part of the reason that we're really excited to be here today, is to talk with you about the fact that very, very large companies are actually really excited about what folks in small towns are doing on this level. That dynamic is going to be crazy, because we're going to go from scaling, you know, say from 20 to 30 to 30 to 200, 400, 500 in order to meet the demand. So what our struggle is going to be with that is, where are the people who have the skill set, because we stopped doing this 20 years ago.
You know, I think it's interesting. You can really get a picture of who we are as a country and what our priorities have been by where people are employed. Mm-hmm. And the number of people employed in retail is insane. Compared to any other function within society.
How interesting.
Yeah, the wow. Number, it's a very, very high percentage, and it really points to our consumerist society and just that glut of availability of things. And I'm going to show my nerd flag here and quote Star Trek VI. there's a line in that, let us redefine progress, to say that just because you can do a thing does not necessarily mean that you should do that thing.
Amen. And also, that is not going to last. Number one, the millennials will not allow it to last, because they're thinking very differently. But our globe will not support this. We cannot continue to produce in this way, nor can we continue to consume in this way, or dispose of so irresponsibly in this way, or treat people behind our garments in such an abusive way any longer in this way. There are so many things about this system that just flat out do not work. It's not sustainable. It can't last. It can't last. And so, if that's the case, you know, we, I think, in the industry have a responsibility to do something in a way that that's positive and that encourages change and gives people an opportunity and changes that dynamic. That we have that responsibility. I believe that very firmly.
So this is something that I did say, I believe, on our last podcast, but I feel that Americans are always looking to support a cause and are always looking to help individuals. Whether there's a disaster here in America or elsewhere in the world, they're the first to want to reach into their pockets and donate. So I feel as if more Americans understood what it was that allowed a T-shirt to cost whatever, $3, $9, I won't mention names of stores, I think there would be a lot of compassion around that and a lot of passion towards supporting America. So I guess I have to wonder, why isn't that message bigger?
Well, and I wonder, correspondingly, I wonder when someone is purchasing a $3 T-shirt or a $10 skirt, why aren't they asking themselves, how does this happen? How is this possible? And we know how it's possible. It's through egregious abuses.
Right.
Well, I think they're thinking, how can they get this more often?
Regrettably.
Yes.
I mean, I think that we have conditioned people, right? And frankly, that's probably, there's culpability to plenty to go around among retailers, fashion labels, if we're being honest, unscrupulous floor managers in other countries and some here in the States. Catherine and I were talking about, you know, reshoring alone doesn't mean that we've suddenly created a virtuous cycle of jobs. You still have to have companies like Good Clothing Company that are committed to ethical and fair labor practices, sustainable production practices, for this to really make a difference. But I think ultimately, to your point, Charles, you know, I think there's something like 1.5 million fashion jobs in the U.S., and the vast majority of those are in retail. The number of people actually making stuff here is, you know, 130,000 or something like that. Now, we can change that equation. We can grow that last segment significantly. And the way that Catherine's doing it, and I think Tim hit the nail on the head, the model that Catherine has found, the kind of secret sauce, is that you can do it, still have pretty good margins, and have employees that are getting paid a notable percentage above the going rate, who have the opportunity for advancement, who are largely women working in a company, in this instance, a woman-owned enterprise. It's a powerful combination. And I think that, to your point, you know, Hillary Clinton likes to say, America is great because America is good. And I think that people would be responsive and are responsive to the idea of trying to buy things that are made here in America, that are sourced here locally, and that are incorporating good practices. So to me, this is really just an issue at this point of execution, making sure that policymakers are aware of what's going on, getting the word out, as you all are doing here.
And it was, at one point, you're saying now it's about 100,000, I think it was more like 1.5 million workers. Yeah,
exactly, yeah, that's right.
Yep. And
that's
actually,
just in the last 20
Burberry
years,
is starting a movement towards the same direction, producing more at home.
Mm-hmm. We hope to see that. We hope to see that
see
across
that here,
the board.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hope to see that across the board. So we have had a few fairly notable brands reach out to us, expressing the concerns that you've pointed out. How do they make that shift? How do they bring that back? But what we're seeing across the board truly is that many, and not all, but many, many, many labels want to bring their things back.
So that's exciting.
It's very exciting.
And you're doing a combination of responding to people as well as, are you kind of strategically approaching people?
Well, yes, to answer your question, yes. What we realized in our sort of, you know, altruistic way that we went about things when we opened the doors of Good Clothing Company and really wanted, you know, to offer small batch manufacturing and basically hold hands with designers and say, you've got this. What we began to understand was that we sort of needed a backbone for that, because that is challenging. And it was through that process that, you know, that the doors opened. And so, yes, we are reaching out at times for the larger, for the to the larger brands. We do not have to reach out to anybody who's small because they have no place to go. I shouldn't say no. We're seeing a few places crop up. When we started a couple years ago, there really wasn't much of a place to go. And I'm very proud to say, I do believe I still hold the lowest minimums in the industry. We do minimums of 10. And we Fantastic. Give you a size variance in that. Wow. So, wow.
It's remarkable.
I don't think anyone else does that.
That's fantastic.
And if you're listening and do, I'm sorry. I haven't heard of you.
Well, then we'll so make yourselves known.
Send us an email.
Please give me a call if you do.
Talk about the types of garments, actually. So for people out there that might want to approach you, what level, what kinds of fabrics are you working with mostly? Or
that's actually a good question.
Classifications.
So, and we tend to want to classify, right? When we go to manufacturers, we want to know, do you focus solely in knits? Are you focusing in denim? What type of machinery do you have? So with a good clothing company, we actually do everything because we're a group of women who are master tailors, head seamstresses. We're all degreed. We're designers. We are a very, very varied and wide array of skill sets. We collectively have over 200 years in the business at our Cape facility, and so we're pretty good at what we do.
So there's not much we don't sew. You have knitwear machines, or you mean cut and sew knits?
We do not. We do. We cut and sew knits, mm-hmm. and we're all cut and sew. So we do no actual garment manufacturing. We don't do 3D knitting or anything of that nature, nor do we do any type of fabrication. But we work with every textile that there is out there, and we have just about every machine known to mankind. And when we don't have it, we go get it. And we make everything from pot holders to wedding gowns. There's not much we don't make. And I say that not jokingly, because we actually have one account that we make an enormous amount of dog collars and leashes for this account, this Massachusetts-based account. They're on our floor.
Is that leather or like?
We can do leather. We have walking foot machines, and I was a leathersmith many years ago. We have that ability. We don't focus on it. We have that ability, but this particular account, they're typically canvas webbing and things of that nature. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I looked up the numbers. In 2014, the Bureau of Labor Statistics listed the number one job category in the United States was retail salespersons. 4.5 million people were employed in retail sales, and another 3.4 million were employed as cashiers in 2014. So those are the biggest jobs in the United States.
I wonder how many of those people had spent a lot of money going to college.
Probably
to
a good
find,
number.
To
probably
find that number. There was nothing to do when they got out, other than sell fast fashion.
Oi.
Oi.
That's the right response, Oy. Charles.
Please stop buying it. Don't encourage them.
So the people that are sewing for you, are they all different age groups?
They are, and it's absolutely, it's so encouraging and completely mind-blowing, to be honest with you. We have girls, I say that with all due respect, it's just because of my age. We have young women who are with us in their very, very early 20s, some of whom they grew up in an environment where sewing was highly encouraged, and it was the way that they dressed, and so it was their sort of their religious upbringing. I have one of the women who works with me has that background and can out-sew just about anyone on our floor. We have women who were heads of floors in LA for years and running full departments. One woman who's doing that. We have designers on the floor. We have a woman who works with me who is also a tailor and seamstress, myself as a master tailor, and then a whole variety of women doing other types of stitching jobs and floor jobs. It's a mix.
Which is great.
It's a pot of stew. Yep.
People wanting to get back to doing things with their hands and being close to other people is very encouraging.
There's something very, very, very rewarding about being able to do something that most others find incredibly challenging and to do it well. And that's rewarding to us. We're very good at what we do, and we're proud of that. But we're also doing it, in a way that's creating positive change. So there's that feel-good piece of it, too. Yeah.
You know, the government spends a lot of money on combating the drug problem, but the statistics are there to show that when you have high unemployment, you have high drug use. Hmm. People get just depressed, and they need something. And when you're not working, when you're not being productive, it leads to dark places. And if we spent more of that money that goes toward the drug war on actually just getting people employed and having them do things with their hands, I think we'd have a lot less of a problem.
I have to agree with you 100%. I think if we thought more prophylactically as a nation, we might see some different outcomes. It's interesting. I was having the same conversation with Abigail, who heads up our Fall River facility, and we were talking about, you know, basically what sedentary people do, or it, you know, people who are depressed, and where that leads. And I'm not here to say that I think addiction stems from those things. I think that addiction is a mental illness, and that there we all have that, you know, whomever has the predisposition to it. But certainly, situational or environmental type things can be a trigger for something like that. And I agree with you. I think if we did more to offer more resources to people as far as economic opportunities go, we would see less of that. I agree. I do agree. How do you feel about that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about all the things that governments spend money on, and there are many, many great investments. So even at the city level, you think about roads and public safety and schools. And sometimes the things they spend money on, they hope it works out, and then it doesn't. So for instance, companies that try to start bidding wars between two cities, you know, where are we going to locate our facility? And they try to get cities to sort of give away the house, right? They tax incentives and all these other things. And then, you know, 5-10 years later, a trend changes and they pull up roots and they leave. And you have a bunch of people who are unemployed. And what I like about this industry and what I like about apparel manufacturing and good clothing companies model is that this isn't that kind of thing, right? If you're a mayor or a state legislator and you're looking at how you can try to really jumpstart and create more economic opportunity to keep people out of trouble in the first place and provide some good jobs, this is the kind of industry, frankly, that you want to be attracting, and you don't have to give away the house to do it. You know, you need to be a partner. You need to try to be creative and show up and try to help out with things like training and, you know, making sure some other things are in place. But it's the startup costs aren't huge, which is, again, why, as I sit here, I think we need to get the word out. I think we're hiding the light under the bushel, so to speak, when it comes to companies like Catherine's and with the movement around reshoring of apparel manufacturing.
There will need to be some specific trade schools, though, because it can't be up to each manufacturer who's opening up a factory to get up and running by training people, because you're doing is amazing, 10 weeks, but
that's right.
Could so, take longer in a lot
and,
of other
and I'd like to clarify, I absolutely agree with you. I think we definitely need more focus on that, and we certainly need institutions that are absolutely focused on that. The reason that we want to do this is that it doesn't exist, right? We have no resources.
Right.
This is out of need. This is we need to fill these positions. We also, as you stated, we are a niche manufacturing company. We're not doing things necessarily in the norm, and we know what to expect, so why not train our people in that way? But yes, absolutely, we need these facilities in place.
And pattern making and sewing, excuse me.
No, I just wanted to add that as a career educator, and one who spent many years working with fashion education, because at that time we didn't have the vision or the resources that Catherine has brought to the table. You would never think that pattern drafting and draping and sewing, which are all part of a fashion education, would actually be a viable career. You think it's part and parcel to being a fashion designer, but you would not say to an individual, you're superb at this pattern execution, you should be a pattern drafter. Where do you go? Well, now there's a place to go.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, our patterning department is our highest margin department. All hail to the pattern makers. We love you.
I mean, they're artists. You don't have good fitting clothing without them.
And the without question.
The company I worked for prior to this, in 2005, we opened a factory in China, and we trained all of our own sewers. So, and
from
it was
from
even,
the ground up.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So, and some of them were sewing in other places, but not necessarily of the quality. But the thing is there's so much involved in the handling of the goods and the pressing of the goods. And in there's so many details that
Absolutely.
Just, I mean, you have to have a passion also and a real understanding for fabric and draping to make a beautiful garment. It's just not anyone. So
Absolutely.
I think everyone has to realize, wow, this could be, we could make it a great career.
Absolutely, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Thinking about the future and where we're going, we know that things like the sustainability issues are there, where we are creating too much product, but we also have an issue where currently robots don't make your clothes, but in the future, a lot of your clothes will be made by robots, and then there won't be those jobs, and we'll have to transition to things like the minimum basic income. And then we have all these people clustered in cities where it's not really sustainable to be on top of each other. So we've got all the land that's now owned by corporations and big farming companies, and we kind of have to go back to dividing it up a little bit and putting people on the land and putting people back into small towns and having communities that are more sustainable in the long term. There's a brain drain in small town America that's been going on for decades, and that's gotta be reversed to some extent, where you don't have that many educated people in the small towns and you gotta send them back. We've gotta turn it around and make everything a little more balanced in a way that it's truly not right now. And it will hurt us so much more in the future if we don't start to compensate today, I think.
I agree.
Tim, any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. To me, this mission, this movement, isn't nearly as daunting as people may think it is. It really is a matter of getting the word out and having some momentum continued. Catherine's already started a trajectory that is really rolling along swiftly. So I'm committed to being an advocate for this and to helping get the word out and to helping make our nation an even better place than it is now.
Fantastic. Thank you all for coming. This has been wonderful.
Thank you. This was great.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And we'll talk to you next week. We have a new website. We are now AmericanFashionPodcast.com. We welcome feedback about the show. You can leave us a voicemail at 646-979-8709 or email info@AmericanFashionPodcast.com or use the comment form on the website. If you would like to be a guest on the show, there is a Be a Guest form on the site as well. You can follow us on Twitter at AFPOD and on Instagram at American Fashion Show. American Fashion Podcast is produced by Open Source Fashion and the Fashion Media Center. For sponsorship and advertising, send an email to myteam@os-fashion.com. Episodes of American Fashion Podcast are copyrighted by Open Source Business Incorporated, all rights reserved.